And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is Ken Thompson.
Hello, everybody.
And our guest today is Fred Smith. Fred is a diplomat, a singer, a songwriter, and the author of the book The Dust of Uruzgan. Fred, welcome to the program.
Good to be on air.
So, Fred, you say in your book that you were born in two minds, and you have been ever since. There seem to be lots of examples, but when you look at going to Afghanistan, did you balance the danger with what you described as therapy?
I think I was just sort of a mixture of excited and scared. You know, you hear a lot of bad things about Afghanistan, and most of them are true, as it turns out. And so I didn't know whether the experience would damage me or be good for me, but I was one of the lucky ones who came out of it physically unscathed and probably a little more resilient for it emotionally.
Yes, I've never heard going to Afghanistan as being therapy before I saw your your analysis of it. But
my shrink counseled me against going. Mm. He turned out to be wrong.
Yes.
But that was more a matter of luck than anything else, I think.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, I think you actually, between your first and your second mission, you even sort of missed Afghanistan, if that's possible.
Yeah, well, you know, I missed the work. It's fascinating. It's a fascinating place and a beautiful place, but of course a very dysfunctional, very troubled place. So I missed the work and the passion of the work and all that we were doing there. I don't miss it so much now. I feel like I've done that.
Yeah. Well, you went as a diplomat with experience in Southeast Asia, in Bougainville in particular, and your father was in the diplomatic service, but did it cause any surprises when you arrived with your guitar?
Well, you know, in fact, I kept the guitar under the bed for the first 2 months because I wanted to be seen as a credible diplomat and political officer and not a flaky musician, but eventually I got it out from under the bed and... Yes, it was a surprise to people. You know, a few people I knew who I worked with there, the first thing they knew about my musical proclivities is when I was up on a stage, the army used to fly sort of bands through for entertain the troops, and I got up one night and sang a song, much to the surprise of a whole bunch of people.
Yes, well, and it's been looked at since by a number of people, and they see the advantages in what you were able to do. And I suppose you quoted, I think it was a Persian saying, that music is a ladder to the soul. And I guess that could be quite useful among the people you were dealing with.
Yeah, well, you know, the Afghans are passionate about poetry and music, and you can understand why. Their day-to-day life is just full of vexations and struggles and... you need something to lift yourself above that, just as we do.
And it is a serious business over there. There are a number of groups that you had to form relationships with. I mean, I think you were just sort of thrown in at the deep end and told to carve out a role there. But who were some of the main people that you had to deal with?
Well, in addition to the American, Dutch and Australian military, who I was sort of engaging with on a very daily basis, my main focus of my attention was on the Afghan community there in Uruzgan province. On the one hand, there were the provincial government figures who were very influential, but even more influential, of course, were the tribal leaders, including a number of the more eminent warlords in the province. And so sorting through all those dynamics and the way they affected the decisions that people were making and the way they were going about their lives and the way they were relating to each other was really what I was in the business of doing, because you know, we go into these places thinking we're there to pursue an enemy like, say, the Taliban, but more influential in people's lives are the tribal dynamics and the basic competition for land, water and political influence.
Mm. And I imagine there were sort of drug lords as well to deal with, were there?
Yeah, well, you know, narcotics is a big part of the economy there, such as it is, and so those who find themselves or who thrust themselves forward as tribal leaders and warlords are generally connected somehow or another to the flow of narcotics.
We hear a lot about the way women are treated in Afghanistan, and you refer to the director of the women's ministry in Afghanistan as actually running a brothel in Tarinkot.
Yeah, well, there were rumours to that effect in 2009. Whether they were true or not, I don't know, but that was certainly a rumour and it's plausible. But the bottom line is, life is tough for women in Afghanistan. It hasn't always been us. There was a period in the 1970s and 80s, indeed, when the Russians were there, when women were encouraged to go to university and take jobs, particularly up in the capital, Kabul. But down in the very traditional Pashtun tribal south of the country, women are take a very low profile in public life. You know, when I was in Uruzgan province, I probably met with a woman. I think I met with a woman once there. They're just not involved in public life. They're confined to the home very much and often pay a big price for sticking their head up above the parapet.
And from what I understand, if you were talking to a woman on your own, that could lead to problems under their religious customs.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen. It might in Kabul, where people are a bit more progressive, but it would not happen in the south.
You were at the FOB. You very helpfully provide a whole list of acronyms at the start of the book, but FOB, Forward Operating Base. What was the day-to-day life like at the front? I mean, I guess we'd normally call it the front line.
Yeah, well, that's right. I spent most of my 2 years in Uruzgan down on a main base in Tarinkot, the provincial capital, which was a very large base, about the size of an airport. But I did spend 2 months up at the forward operating base, 40 kilometres north of Tarinkot, in a village in a district called Chora. So it was a much smaller forward operating base, and that was really where the rubber hit the road in terms of the work we were doing there. And, you know, it was a beautiful place, a beautiful valley, but, again, a very complex and competitive tribal environment. You know, my job was to spend my time talking to the senior tribal leaders in the district, and they would come in to talk to me, or I'd go out and talk to them, and they would generally come in to complain about other tribal leaders. You know, there's a shortage of water in the valley, and that makes for very competitive dynamics. So life is tough out there, and it's not unusual for people to bring their young sons or daughters in for medical treatment and have them die that afternoon through basic malnutrition or diarrhea, vomiting, things like that. So very Spartan conditions, and to the eye it looks like the 14th century, people getting around on donkeys and bikes and dusty roads and mud constructs. But at the same time, you know, they did have mobile phones and satellite dishes and generators. So it's a strange juxtaposition between a medieval feudal society and the modern world, complete with AK-47s. But for all that, I've got to say the Afghans are great company. You know, I find them very entertaining and very courteous in the way they engage. And so I made some close friends amongst the tribal leaders up there in the Chora Valley, a good number of whom have since perished in violent circumstances, regrettably.
Yes, well, you were able to summarise that, and look, we're going to listen to a song on the topic that you wrote and performed. It's a song called Live Like an Afghan by Fred Smith.
Like an Afghan, live like an Afghan lives. Walk tall as the rockets are falling around me, laugh as they barely miss. And if you meet me in the streets of Kandahar, then greet me with your bearded kiss. We shall live. Yes, we shall live like the Afghans, live like the Afghans live. When I dance, I wanna dance like an Afghan, dance like the Afghans dance. You never know what's gonna happen tomorrow. This could be our last chance. So shake your hips and swing your hands to heaven. Let your feet pound the dusty floor. Awake in the morning to tea and some flatbread. Get stuck back into the war. When I love, I want to love like an Afghan. Love like the Afghans do. Everyone needs someone to love, and today I'm in love with you. Meet the boys on a Thursday evening, but a man needs a wife or two. When I love, I want to love like an Afghan, love like the Afghans do. Fight, I wanna fight like an Afghan, fight like the Afghans fight. Kiss your cheek if we should meet in the market, out in the broad daylight. Rip your throat out under cover of darkness with a courteous flick of the wrist. 'Cause manners matter. When you fight like an Afghan, fight like the Afghans live.
Live Like an Afghan by Fred Smith, is our special guest today. Fred is a diplomat, a singer and a songwriter, and the author of both the book and the album, The Dust of Uruzgan. Fred, did you ever get used to the danger of living in Afghanistan?
I suppose I did. You know, it's just part of what's going on around you, and you take precautions. You wear body armour, you travel in a convoy, or if not in vehicles, you know, if not in heavily protected vehicles, then in foot patrols. You know, and when I was up at the forward operating base, I was getting out surrounded by 12 US soldiers for my sort of force protection. And at some level, that provides protection, but you might walk past a motorcycle or a donkey and you look at the saddle pack on the donkey and you think, well, if there's an IED, if there's a bomb in that pack, I'm dead. So there's a certain acceptance of the limits of how much you can control your fate in those environments, and I suppose you get used to it, but I don't go chasing that sort of stuff anymore now that I've got a little daughter. The risk equation has changed a bit.
Well, you featured in an Australian Story in October 2013, and there was one particularly striking moment when your father, who was also a diplomat, high in the service, arrived to see you, and he was in the full body armour, and you were standing there with a Panama hat.
Well, they divvy out, the Defence Force is sort of obliged to divvy out force protection on proportionate to rank, and my dad was the equivalent of a four-star general, and so he had, like four or five bushmasters and a couple of dozen special forces protecting him. I was getting around in a Toyota Land Cruiser in a floppy hat. Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. But we were on base there, so I wasn't particularly in peril at the time.
While you were there, you learnt the language of the Australian soldiers. I guess you also learnt a bit of Afghan.
A bit of Pashtun. It's a difficult language, but I also learnt to speak ADF, which is a sort of interesting mix of sort of acronyms and expletives combined with a smattering of the Queen's English. You can pick it up, within 2 or 3 weeks if you've got a good ear. But the challenge is not to speak it to your wife when you're calling home. She starts to wonder if she's still talking to the man she married, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, your wife is a very tolerant person, knowing, you were away for, 2 years on the first mission. So it's a long time for her to be battling on her own, isn't it?
Yeah, it was before that our daughter was born, so things were a little easier. But as I said, I wouldn't do that sort of work now. You need to keep things solid on the home front when you've got a little one around, I think.
Mm. While you were in Afghanistan, you must have, as you were getting close to the Australian soldiers, you must have shared their grief over some of those 40 soldiers that were killed in that whole campaign.
Yeah, I did, and I think that's how and why I came to write the songs that I wrote. It was interesting. I arrived there in late July of 2009 in time for a ramp ceremony, a funeral for a soldier named Ben Renato, who was killed in an IED strike up in the Baluchi Valley in mid-July before I arrived, and ended up finding a lot about his story and understanding there was another soldier involved in the incident who accidentally stepped out on an anti-personnel mine, which was lit by detonation cord to another mine which killed this young guy, Ben. And so I could see there was a lot of grief around that, and I talked to a lot of soldiers about that. But then interesting, sort of 11 months passed, and we thought, well, things have calmed down and no one's going to get hurt. And then all of a sudden, in the summer of 2010, we lost 10 soldiers in 10 weeks, and including a couple of guys from the tent next door to mine up at Fort Operating Base Mirwais. And so just feeling the communal sense of grief around that got me writing about 3 or 4 songs about soldiers that we lost in that summer of 2010 there in Uruzgan province.
And in fact, that song we've talked about, The Dust of Uruzgan, it talks about the incident involving Ben Renato and Paul Warren.
Paul Warren is a straight shooter all the way, and I've got to know him since. He's a remarkable character, a remarkable guy. I didn't know him when I wrote the song, but I just knew from the facts that he would be a guy who would be in a lot of pain, a lot of confusion, and also carrying a sense of survivor's guilt for having been, A, lost a mate, but B, been actually involved in the incident in which his mate was killed. And so I wrote the song from his perspective, just to try and unravel how he must be looking at the world. And as I sort of predicted in the song, he did go through a very difficult period, a couple of years of self-medication and depression and thoughts of suicide and all those things. But he ended up pulling himself out of it. His wife was particularly supportive, and he had a little daughter and decided he needed to focus on being a good dad, and eventually ended up working for Mates for Mates, which is a charity organisation which supports returned soldiers. I understand he spoke to Simon quite recently, the CEO of Mates for Mates. They're a good outfit. And Paul's ended up documenting all his story in a book called The Fighter, also published by Allen & Unwin. And it was actually when he wrote his book that I decided I needed to write my book.
Yeah.
So it all came around in a funny kind of way.
Yeah, you just mentioned briefly that his daughter had a big influence on him getting his act together again after that terrible experience, and I suppose you two have got that in common as well, that you've both had a daughter in your life that's sort of changed things.
Yeah, no, it's funny how our lives have sort of converged, mine and Paul's. very different backgrounds. I grew up in the diplomatic world of Canberra and diplomatic posts. He grew up in outback Toowoomba, got a job as an abattoir worker and chucked that in and joined the army in his late 20s. So very different backgrounds, but our stories have sort of come and intertwined with one another, and we've helped each other out in bits and pieces. They're mates and mates. We're actually the partners in my recent tour of Queensland with the Afghanistan show, and Paul came to a number of the shows and represented them there. I was involved in organising for him to get a publishing deal with Alan and Unwin, who'd been in touch with me earlier. And then when they were about to write his book, they wanted me to write an afterword for it, and I wrote that and discovered that I enjoyed the process of writing, and that's what really got me to pull the finger out and write my own book. So it's interesting the way our lives are intertwined.
Yeah, and it also meant that at some stage you performed that song, which is largely about Ben Rinaldo from Paul Warren's perspective, but you met the mother of Ben Rinaldo at one of your concerts, didn't you?
Yeah, that was back in when the song was very raw, back in the middle of 2011. I just released the Dust of Uruzgan album, and I was playing a gig in a little club down in the east of Melbourne, and I was introducing the song. I said, this is a song about a soldier called Ben Rinaldo, and a voice came from the back of the room and said, he's my son. And of course we nearly fell off the stage, but then of course I went ahead and played it and went and talked to the lady afterwards, and she was great, very courageous woman named Jenny, who like a lot of the parents of soldiers who perish over there, they just want to understand the facts. And she said that the song had helped her to understand the facts in a way that was more sort of simple and straightforward than the inquiry report, which had been full of acronyms and redactions.
Yeah, at one stage you say a quote, I think it's an old saying, a child gives you hope, which is a great thing for all of us, I think. But
one of the things an Afghan friend said to me, a young interpreter actually, I mean, I was in my early 40s when I was over there, but the interpreters were all young men in the mid-20s, but of course in Afghanistan you have children young, and I was talking, my interpreter Zia, excellent young bloke who now lives in Newcastle, was talking to me about his daughter, and I said, how does it feel to have a daughter? And he said, well, a child gives you hope. And I guess that's right. You can only, in the uncertain world that we live in, it sort of enforces a kind of a need for optimism, doesn't it? You've got to try and make something of your life and the world we live in.
Fred, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song for us. Would you like to pick one and tell us why you picked it?
Yeah, well, you know, I served there for two years in Afghanistan and returned from my second stint in late 2013 and honestly grew a lot from the experience. I came back and more grateful and I think a grounded person, but a lot of people are not so lucky. You know, you can be very unlucky and be in the wrong place at the wrong time, get injured. And so my sense of gratitude of having returned in one piece was grew tenfold when in January of 2014, my wife gave birth to a little daughter, a little girl named Olympia. And it just filled my heart with a great gladness for her and for all that we have in Australia. And so around that time, I recorded this song called Beautiful Girl.
Soft like a pearl,
like a lump of dough. Your mama's gonna feed you when you need to, you just let us know. Beautiful girl, princes and earls, they're gonna come court. I'll build a fort to keep their fingers off you. But like your granddaddy knew, you're gonna do just what you're gonna do. Well, it's as fickle as fashion. There'll be bright lights flashing as you crash into your darkest night. This old world's gone blind, but if you know your own mind, I know you're gonna be alright. Beautiful girl, it's a dangerous world, it's suffering, it's huffing and a puffing, and it's gone to blow. But with a heart like Magellan, there's no telling where you just might go. And your daddy's gonna be here if you need him, so you know. I said your daddy's gonna be here if you need me, just say so.
And that was Beautiful Girl, written and performed by our guest today, Fred Smith. So it just remains for me now to give a special thank you. Fred, thank you very much for being on the program.
Oh, good to talk to you, and thanks for taking time to read the book.
Yeah. Oh, look, I would recommend to everybody The Dust of Uruzgan. Get the book and the record. They're both inspiring.
You can find them on my website, fredsmith.com.au.
Great, and that'll be on our website as well. So don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.